Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome back. I've been looking forward for quite some time to having our guest today, and always honored when we have time to spend with John O'Connor. He's a former federal prosecutor. He's an experienced trial lawyer. He's the author of a fascinating couple of books, Postgate and How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. Actually started all the way back there. There's a picture of the cover of the book. And you can go to postgatebook.com and check out that book and a follow-up, The Mysteries of Watergate. Both are very informative of what's happening and has happened to media. John has also served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, representing the United States both in criminal and civil cases. Brother John, good to see you. How are you, friend?
Hey, great to be with you, Perry.
Well, just about an hour ago, 9-0, the Supreme Court said to the states you can't boot them off the ballot. What's your take?
Well, it was an obvious one. There are so many different holes in the argument, it's absurd. It obviously never applied to the president. It only applied to someone after they were elected anyway, and the question was whether they were seated or not. And of course, you have to find the person guilty of an insurrection. So this is clearly meant for Civil War partisans. And it was just a silly gambit by the left. But it just shows how desperate and how really kind of silly they are. This was just a silly venture, but everybody who wanted to believe it went along with it.
The other question is, the Supreme Court, John, has decided to hear the immunity case, which is so interesting to me, because if there wasn't something there, you would think they would just refuse to hear it. What's your take on that?
First of all, the question that they posed was a simple one. They didn't purport to decide which acts were within the scope of his presidency and which weren't. And that's an issue if he's acting as an electioneer rather than a president. But the question posed was, does the president have immunity for official acts while in office? And it almost is, the question is almost posed in a way where the answer is going to be yes. And I think that's what they're going to decide, and that's why they posed it that way. There had to be four justices posing the question. So as long as there's one of the remaining two justices, conservative justices, you probably have a majority there. But that's going to just raise some thorny questions of what acts were within the scope of the presidency and which ones weren't. And that's going to be the tough one for the trial judge. Now, you hope that the Supreme Court. So my prediction is they're going to rule that he has immunity, but that will only get you halfway because you have to figure out which of these acts were where he's acting within the presidency and when he's and which he's not. There are some cases that talk about the outer edge. You have to go to the outer edge of his presidential ambit, and we'll see the way they phrase what is a presidential act. But it won't mean that, I mean, Trump will still be prosecuted. Don't get me wrong. He'll be prosecuted, and then the question for the judge and the jury will be which of these acts were outside of his presidential authority.
Okay, but the real win here is all of this gets kicked down the road, probably either before the election or post the election, right?
Perry, that should be the result. The result should be that there's no way that this thing gets tried before the election because the Justice Department policy, which I will read to you, is this. I knew you were going to ask me this. Federal prosecutors and agents may never select the timing of any action, including investigative steps, criminal charges, or statements, for the purposes of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving any advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or party. Now, the reason I bring this up is because the next controversy that I will be talking to you on your show, I guarantee you, is that the prosecutor and the judge will probably take the position that the policy I just read to you doesn't apply, once someone's already indicted. And that, oh, gee, once you get indicted, the prosecutor has nothing to do with when the case goes to trial. He's just a passive vessel, and this policy doesn't apply. And so you're going to see a big controversy over that, because the Mar-a-Lago case, which is the key, not the Mar-a-Lago case, the January 6th case, is going to probably get decided in June, and there's going to be a couple months of pretrial motions, and the quickest the judge is going to get this out to trial will be in August or September during the election season. And Jack Smith, and maybe, and the judge will probably agree with him, oh, gee, this doesn't have anything to do with this Justice Department policy. We're going forward. And in fact, it has everything to do with the Justice Department policy. These things weren't indicted until 2023. It was inevitable that the cases would come to trial right around the election time. You can't get a cases of this magnitude, this one and the one in Florida, you can't get them out in less than a year. And so this was clearly timed. The whole thing was timed, right, to interfere with the election. And Jack Smith is going to be on TV every day making statements, which is what the policy tells him not to do. But he's going to do that. And then his statements in court are going to be broadcast around the world. Everybody will know the prosecutor's statement that Trump is guilty of sin. And so it violates the policy, but there's going to be a big argument over that, Perry.
I see your point. That's why you're John and I'm not. So what is to the point that Jack Smith has been appointed wrongfully? Is there any substance to that?
Yes, there is. I had not thought about it until Ed Meese and his group, Calabresi, just raised it. But when you look at it, this is entirely different than the old independent counsel statute, in which Congress authorized the courts to name investigators in certain situations. This is a different one. This is where the Justice Department decides it's going to, for various reasons, appoint a special counsel. Well, wait a second. The special counsel has more authority than a U.S. attorney. He has the same power, except broader in terms of geography. Why doesn't that person have to be appointed by Congress? And I think that's absolutely correct. Now, as they say, that person, whether it's Jack Smith or somebody else, can assist an appropriate person who's named. So let's say you name somebody like John Durham to be the special counsel. That's fine, because he's already appointed U.S. attorney. He already has the authority, prosecutorial authority, that's been given to him under the Constitution, under the Appointments Clause. So, and I think that's the correct position. Now, is anybody going to disqualify Jack Smith? I mean, I think our system is broken down, and I don't know who's going to decide this, but I don't think the trial court will go along with this. But I think it's correct. Let's put it this way. It's just correct.
Hmm. One quick question, then I'll come back after a break. But I can't imagine, John, what's going on in your mind and your heart to see your industry, if I can put it that way, your vocation trampled upon like this.
It is terrible, because the politics have entered it. When I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California during very tumultuous times, especially in San Francisco, where everything in the world was going on here, you did not know. I did not even know what party my other attorneys were affiliated with. I never knew. I work right next to Bob Mueller. I never knew Bob Mueller was a Republican. At the time, I was a Democrat. I'm sure he didn't know I was a Democrat. That did not enter into things. You had some slight differences in orientation between and among the courts. Some people would be more liberal on civil rights, some people would be more conservative, and so forth and so on, and in criminal law matters. But other than that, the whole process was not politicized. It wasn't politicized at all. Mm. Or, maybe a taint, as we talk about philosophy on civil rights. But now today, it's just rank. It's just, what hat you have on. And that determines everything. And it's really, really infected our system.
Yeah.
It started out infected with the media infected. And now that affects everything.
Yeah, I often think about what you folks are thinking that are in law, how the fidelity and the integrity of the system has been violated and how you process that in your mind these days. Let me take a quick break. I want to come back, got some more questions. Always an honor to have with us John O'Connor. Check out his website and his book called postgatebook.com. where you can get a copy of the Postgate book and then the other one that follows up with that, The Mysteries of Watergate. We'll be right back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Okay, welcome back, and always an honor to have with us John O'Connor, former federal prosecutor. He's a very experienced trial lawyer. His book is a must-read called Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and began what we call today's partisan advocacy journalism, not to mention partisan advocacy in the judicial system. But there's a picture of the cover of the book. And he's also served as an assistant U.S. attorney in Northern California, representing the United States both in criminal and civil cases. John, there's a lot going on here. What do you think of the... I guess the question I have to ask is, when a case becomes a case, and such is the case in Fulton County, when the DA and the prosecutor now are tangled up in a web unlike anything we've ever seen before. So if I understand this correctly, they both could be removed from the case, but the case could go forward, or could the judge remove them from the case and nullify the case? And then the other question I have that tags onto this, is the judge now has on trial his boss, the DA?
The DA has nothing to do with the judge. The judge and the DA are in different branches of government.
Okay.
But the court supervises the prosecution in his court. And so it's sort of as you were a clash or a combination of two branches. So what I think the court's going to do in the administration of justice is you could knock me over with a feather, Perry, if he didn't disqualify the DA and probably Nathan Wade, but certainly the DA and probably Wade too. But the question is, what's the remedy going to be? The case will not be dismissed against Trump because there's really that might be unjust. If this is, for instance, if this really were a decent prosecution, but I think the question is whether or not somebody else within Fannie Willis's office can now step in and handle it. And the judge says, okay, you don't talk to Willis at all. You're not beholden to her. Well, he's still her underling. He still is supervised by Willis. He still gets his pay raises and retention and all that from Willis. So it's very hard for her not to be involved if the same office continues with the case. If I were judge, I would say this case can continue, but I'm going to name a DA from another county, from Cobb County, for example. The second question would be, does it stay in Fulton County? Fulton County, the real problem with this is there's been such terrible pretrial publicity. We're getting into another principle of prosecution that you cannot create, the prosecution cannot create undue publicity. If so, the case can be dismissed or the venue can change. And so What I would say is I would entertain a motion not only to, I would not only give the case to another DA in another county, I would entertain a motion to change venue and send it to that DA's county. That would be the best win for Trump, and it would probably be the fairest thing. But that said, this case may stay in Fulton County. And if so, we've had Fani Willis come out and say that Trump's a racist and this whole idea of removing her is racist and he's a terrible guy. And everybody in town has heard it. Everybody in the county's heard this. I don't think he can get a fair trial in Fulton County.
Okay, so there's some other parts to this. Ethically, they both have violated themselves. And I don't know, it appears to me that they have committed perjury, both of them.
I agree.
Does that result in disbarment?
You can look at this, and depending upon the politics of the state bar there, remember Bill Clinton got disbarred for his false statement under oath before a judge who was monitoring the deposition. He didn't even make a false statement. He agreed with his lawyer's false statement that there was no sex involved, pointing to Monica Lewinsky's affidavit. And he got disbarred. And I think that there's certainly grounds. And then the fellow in the Duke lacrosse prosecution got disbarred for not giving over evidence that he had. So she could get disbarred. I doubt that she will get disbarred. I think this is probably going to be a slap on the wrist. She'll be, there'll be a statement made and so forth and so forth and so on.
Could the citizens of Fulton County recall her?
Yes. I doubt that'll happen given the political makeup of Fulton County. But hopefully this ends her career. Hopefully she will not get reelected. She's so disgraced the office. I mean, this was a terrible show. Out and out perjury and more perjury, and then suborning perjury with the latest witness to come in. It's really terrible. And everyone in the world sees it, and it's things that the normal person can understand. We all understand, you know, males and females getting together. And so I think it's so clear what happened here. And yet, so you have money and you have sex. And it's very clear there's perjury about both.
There's another element to this case that has popped up, and I don't know of its legitimacy, but apparently there is a third person behind the scene that met with the White House on a couple occasions relative to maybe orchestrating this case. Is there any substance to that? Do you know?
Well, I'm sure that occurred. I would be stunned if it didn't occur. The real question is, what is wrong with that? This has clearly been pushed by the White House. There's no doubt about that. But still, it is within the realm of the duties of a state prosecutor, which she is, to do her thing. And so, technically, there's nothing really wrong with coordination. We prosecuted Patty Hearst federally in San Francisco, and I was on that team, and we coordinated with the Los Angeles prosecutor that was going to prosecute her next in Los Angeles for local crimes. So it's not uncommon. That's the same thing in drug cases.
Okay.
Now, in this case, the problem is it's all political.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that except with coordinating. The problem is it's all about politics and about getting Trump. That's the sin. It is not the coordination.
One last question. I only got a couple of minutes left. Attorney General Garland pledged on the Sunday talk show this past weekend to fight voter ID laws in the United States. How can he legally do that?
Well, that's a real good question, because each state is supposed to be handling its own elections. This is called the Constitution.
Yeah.
Now, I suppose even in federal elections, although there's obvious Department of Justice input into elections, The Department of Justice has the power under the Civil Rights Division, for example, to monitor the elections and to see if the laws are carried out. The problem is, and those are federal laws, like, for instance, offering money to someone who votes, I think, is a federal crime. But that said, voter ID really is an issue for the states. So I think they're trying to preempt the state and just grab more power to the federal government, and that shouldn't happen.
John, you're fascinating. You must go to bed at night really scratching your head.
Hey, you can't make this up, Barry. You really can't. There's so much that's going on now. Yeah. I can't believe it.
Well, in our lifetime, we're going to be faced with looking at making a decision between two incumbents that we've lived under.
You know? That's right. The question is who is the lesser of the evils? And yeah. I think, in my view, it's very clear. I'm not a big Trump fan, but I think there's no, in my view, at least he is commonsensical and is more traditional the way our country has traditionally been run according to the Constitution.
Yeah.
And I get back as a in Catholic philosophy that I've been taught, there's a big difference. You can have a virtuous, the main virtue of a carpenter is to be a good carpenter. And Trump, although he may not be personally virtuous, he had some virtue as a president.
Gotta go. Thank you, friend. God bless you, pal.
Okay.
Stay in there. I look forward to many visits.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.